This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. I am Ian Denemy, part of sort of a motley crew of podcasters today. Is it fair to call us a motley crew?
How long have you been gone for?
Well, I've always been here.
How long have you been gone from the podcast for?
My presence alone makes it a bit of a motley crew.
If you guys are the motley crew, then I'm Tommy Lee, because I'm Matt Larkin. I'm on every podcast, so there's nothing motley about me.
Boomer reference! That isn't a boomer reference, is it?
No, it's not.
No, it isn't.
Motley crew?
I'm post-boomer.
It's Gen X.
Gen X. Yeah, no. I think it's a Gen X reference.
We're not calling ourselves millennials. That's for damn sure.
Even though I've heard that the cutoff is like 83, 84, which makes Ian me, I guess, just inside the cut of millennials, but I can't stand that thought.
There's a new thing called old millennials and young millennials.
All right, that's fine.
1978!
Anyway, as you can hear, Matt Larkin is with us, as is managing editor Edward Fraser. And after Monday night's big win by the Nashville Predators, 4-1 over the Penguins, the series is tied at 2, heading back to Pittsburgh for Game 5 on Thursday. And we've now got a best-of-3 series. So with that in mind, Matt, who does that give the advantage to?
I mean, if you look at the way the series has gone in a strict hockey sense, you have to say Nashville has the advantage because the Predators have been the better team. They've outshot Pittsburgh in every game, even the losses in Pittsburgh games 1 and 2. Territorially, the Preds were dominant in that game. I think the Penguins are having a lot of trouble with that dominant top 4 Preds defense core. There's nothing like it. But to me, it still comes down to Pekka Rinne, because Rinne was a different goaltender for games 3 and 4 at home. He's been fantastic at home all throughout the playoffs. And I do think Nashville has been the better teams. They should have the edge. But if Rinne reverts to that sort of scared, skittish version we saw in Pittsburgh, with the series going back to Pittsburgh for 2 of 3, it's not going to matter, and the Penguins are going to win.
As the series goes along, the pressure ramps up. And now that it's a best of three, it really goes up. Pittsburgh's been there before. Nashville hasn't. They've played loose. They've played well. But I think Pittsburgh still gets the advantage in the series. They've been outplayed in all 4 games, no doubt about that. But the pressure mounts. You've got a team that's been there and done that and knows how to win, who has elite-level players, despite the thoughts of some other people who are criticizing the play of Crosby and Malkin insanely.
Yeah.
But also, like, home ice advantage. I mean, look at the records for both these teams on home ice. So I've loved this series before so far. I love the fact that Nashville's come back, because I wanted to see a good series. You know, the consensus around the office was that, okay, Nashville, they'll get their 1 game in, and then Pittsburgh's going to come back and win game 4, and that'll be it for the series. Fantastic effort by Nashville last night, and it makes for a great series. The whole series has been great. But to me, I think Pittsburgh gets the edge big time here. And Rinne, yeah, he's going to matter big time, and I don't think there's any questions about Matt Murray. You know, maybe he was a little bit off in Game 3, but I don't think he was that bad. Not nearly as bad as the team that played in front of him. But even a Rinne, he's going to have to be outstanding to me, because Pittsburgh, I think, is going to elevate their game for the rest of this series.
And what's interesting to me is, in the first couple games of the series, Pittsburgh's finishing ability really stood out, because Gensel was on fire, and they're so opportunistic. You know, Malkin scored a goal as well, and it looked like Nashville just couldn't answer. And, you know, they did have Arvidsson and Forsberg score 31 each in the regular season, but not on par with what Pittsburgh has in terms of raw finishing ability. But in games 3 and 4, it's not like they were scoring stinkers on Matt Murray. They scored a lot of really nice goals. They got Craig Smith goal in game 3 and the Victor Arvidsson goal in game 4. Like, really nice goal scorers' goals. And if the Predators have sort of rediscovered their scoring touch, suddenly the series looks a lot more even, because it takes good shots like that to beat Matt Murray, who's very consistent as a goaltender. But if Nashville's found that, then okay, here we go.
I want to give a little bit of credit to Nashville's centermen. I mean, mm-hmm. They were looking. That was why we called Pittsburgh in this series, is because they were going to get blown out of the water down the middle. They've held their own. Or maybe even been better. I mean, Mike Fisher has been outstanding mm-hmm. in this series. Yarncroc, he's been really good as well. Yeah. Colton Sissons, he's, you know. But
what about Freddy Gauthier? Well, where did this guy come from?
You know, it's funny.
Or not Gauthier, sorry. Gaudreau.
Gaudreau.
I am exactly, though. Am I right?
Thinking of the goat.
Yeah.
The fact that I screw up their names just shows how obscure Freddie Gaudreau has been.
I'm looking at our depth chart from our playoff preview edition. And I'm going to pretend, because this is not a video podcast, that we've got Freddie Gaudreau sitting there right at number 5. Of course we don't. We've got Vernon Fiddler there.
That's right. He's not even on the list because Ryan Johansson.
Not even on the depth chart.
He'd be number 6 in their depth chart, but Ryan Johansson was the guy we had topping the depth chart. And
well, let's pretend that he would have been number 6, because we don't actually.
Let's go number 6.
Unbelievable performance. And that's, I mean, that, again, you love that about the playoffs, guys stepping up like that. And Gensel as well. I mean, a guy who, like, he's going from potential healthy scratch in game 1 to now looking like a decent shot at the Conn Smythe if Pittsburgh wins, because Malkin, I'll tell you, the gambling odds are starting to creep closer, a heck of a lot closer.
Yeah, and I mean, and Gensel, I mean, he's still in contention to tie or beat Dino Cicerelli's record for goals by rookie in a postseason, which I think is 14. I think you have to
consider, very different era.
Yeah, very different era, exactly. I think you have to consider Gensel, especially the way he's played at home. I mean, he's probably got some more goals in him.
Speaking of being at home, obviously the home team has won every game in this series. Is that really what this series might come down to? Does Pittsburgh get an edge simply because they get 2 games at home and Nashville must win a game on the road in order to win the series?
I say yes, especially because of how stark the contrast is between Rene's numbers on the road and at home. If Rene was showing any kind of ability to look like himself on the road, I would say no. But for that reason, I think, yes, Pittsburgh's got the edge with that 2 or 3.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's going to make a big difference going back to Pittsburgh. I think we saw that in games 1 and 2 versus games 3 and 4. It's hard to imagine. I'm not in that room. It's hard to imagine Pittsburgh being fazed by a crowd. Of course, they're all saying the right things. We feed off the energy. But there's no doubt that Nashville plays better on their home ice than they do on the road. And the fact that Pittsburgh's got two, if I'm laying money at this point, this is going 7, because this is going back to Pittsburgh. And how does it not just go home team, home team, home team through the rest of this series? It seems like the logical one, and you never want to just go straight ahead, because you play the games for a reason, and sports are fun because wacky things happen, but to me...
Except for in basketball, everything you're supposed to happen happens, and that's it. It's boring.
A team sweeps the playoffs! Are you kidding?
Charles Barkley was right.
Are you kidding? I love that Charles Barkley interview. That was fantastic. Did you see it?
It's a little bit... I mean, hockey people love it because it's a little bit, please like my sport.
Yes.
That's fine.
People love when someone like Charles Barkley says, I love your sport.
It does, but the fact that Charles Barkley says, while I'm working, I'm watching hockey because my sport sucks. Now, yes, I'm putting words in his mouth, but because games are blowouts, he's like, I've watched every game. I understand what you're saying, but to me, that was a neat point by him.
Quick tangent. Can I say something I don't like about our sport? Can we talk about the schedule?
It's awful.
The first 4 games of this series were played over 7 days.
Yeah.
The final 3 are played over 8.
It's ridiculous.
Absurd.
We can talk about whether that gives anyone an advantage, but, I mean, the days off, it doesn't matter if there's 1 day off or 4 days off, Chris Letang's not walking through that door.
No.
Ryan Johansson ain't walking through that door. So
it lets guys who are a little bit banged up get recovered. But, yeah, you're losing momentum with these. Like, if you're trying to attract a casual fan, they've forgotten about it by the time another game is being played. Now, I couldn't agree more. To me, it's simply one-on, one-off, one-on, one-off. I mean, I haven't looked closely at what the scheduling conflicts are, but, 8 days to play 3 games?
Yeah, and if this goes 7, if this goes 7, that's like half a month for one playoff series.
That's
I don't think we need hockey games being played on June 14th, not the least of which because I have vacation scheduled for the second of series ends, and I want to get up to this cottage, and
you're missing prime cottage time.
Exactly.
That it's all about you, though.
No, I think it is.
Hey, it's about the momentum, and
that's what it is. Yeah,
you know, give players a little more time off during the season, and they won't be so banged up come June as well.
But all credit to Pittsburgh if they manage to pull this off, because not only did they play a long season, I'm sure the cup stretched out just as long last year. I don't remember. And then Malkin and Crosby, World Cup games as well.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot of hockey for these guys. And never mind the fact that their defense unbelievably banged up. Yeah, I mean, a ton of credit to those guys if they managed to pull this off, because they've played a lot of hockey over the past two seasons.
I'm with Pierre LeBrun. I think he's the one who says a lot on Twitter, season should not extend into June. Make it so that the last possible date is May 31st. There's something nice and crisp about that. Hockey's played until May.
Yeah, I mean, the regular season. Now, I fully understand the economics of this, and we're never going to see games rolled back. But, I mean, we would all benefit from a shorter regular season and a start. Because you can't condense the regular season anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's why this thing, I mean, they spread it out, but that's why it rolls into to June. And no, I couldn't agree more. Like, hockey in June, you know, I'm ready to work on yearbook. I'm looking forward to next season.
To be fair, there was the World Cup this year, so the season started a little bit later. Only about a week.
Yeah.
But still. And I'd like to see what, if any, scheduling conflicts there are, because they set the schedule long before the teams are determined, long before the playoffs even start. I think if you, next year, next October, if you Google Stanley Cup final schedule,
yes,
it's out there. They say last possible game 7 is June 14th or 15th, whatever it might be.
I've learned that from planning magazine close dates,
sure,
is that last possible day the Cup could end, it's not a floating day depending on whether or not each of the series are sweeps in the first three rounds. That is set in stone,
mm-hmm,
which is really strange. I'd love to see that one time. What would happen if they had sweep, and everything was done? Would they just
get 28 days off?
Yeah,
it'd be like college football,
weeks, yeah,
for a bowl game.
You'd be like the Memorial Cup champion Windsor Spitfires.
Oh, big dig.
Yeah,
there you go. Shall we move on to something equally exciting, the upcoming expansion draft? We're about a week or two away from that. And lots of speculation about what's going to happen, who's going to be protected. What do you see, Matt, as a potential big trade that could happen before the expansion draft as teams try to get their rosters set?
I think one of the teams, if not the team most likely to make a trade, is the Anaheim Ducks, because they're really painted into a corner. They've got so many good young defensemen, Josh Manson, Hampus Lindholm, Cam Fowler, Sammy Vatanen. And I think they're going to be in a situation where, because they're going to have to go for the 4-4-1 protection strategy if they have all four of those defensemen, those veteran defensemen, in the lineup, which means, and you got to protect Ryan Getzlaf, Ryan Kesler, Corey Perry. They all have no movement clauses, which would force them to choose between Rickard Rakell and Jacob Silverberg. I think Rakell, leading goal scorer on the team, is the easy choice, and that nudges out Jacob Silverberg, who's an awfully good guy to lose in the expansion draft. So what I think you're going to see Bob Murray do is trade one of those defensemen, trade Sammy Vatanen, I'd say most likely, because you still have Brandon Montour, Shea Theodore, they're exempt, they're good young guys that can step right into the lineup. And if you do that, then you can go to the 7-3-1 protection strategy, protect seven forwards, including Silverberg, even Andrew Cogliano. It makes things much easier. And I think the seventh forward protected would be the guy they get in the trade for Vatanen. So the trade I'll predict is Sammy Vatanen to the Toronto Maple Leafs for, I'm going to say, Connor Brown. We know Mike Babcock was in town watching the Ducks play. I've heard rumors, just other Toronto reporters, and at the Stanley Cup Final, we were talking, and Brown's name seems to be the one that comes up most commonly. I think it's a fair deal. Vatanen's stock has dipped a little bit. He's a bit one-dimensional. He's not very physical. He's small, but he's a right shot. He's young. He's very mobile. And another team like the Leafs need him a lot more than the Ducks do, because the Ducks have a lot of great mobility, and adding that right shot to Toronto would really help. And the Ducks need some good, young, NHL-ready forwards. They have good forwards in the system, Sam Steele, Max Jones. But they need some guys to come in and help right now. And Brown, good penalty killer. He's fast. He's got a bit of offensive upside left in his game. Some people are going to say James Van Riemsdyk. I still think the Leafs would be dumb to trade him. He's got great chemistry on that line with Bozak and Mitch Marner. Great contract. So Brown for Sammy Vatanen.
Why is it that Manson's always the guy who comes up in the Toronto deal?
I think because they should want him. And I think Manson is a guy who I consider him a really good, a well-kept secret for a long time, but I think he played so well this year that even the Ducks know now that he's the guy they have to keep, because he plays a different game, he blocks shots, he hits, he shuts down the opponent's top lines. And because Anaheim has great mobility elsewhere with, you know, Fowler, Lindholm, Manson's skill set is more unique, and they don't have many Mansons.
He contrasts well against their other defenders.
Exactly. So for that reason, I think now Manson is the guy who stays, and Vatanen's the guy who goes.
If you really want Van Riemsdyk and the Leafs really want Manson, would you make that deal, Manson, for Van Riemsdyk?
That's a good one too. I mean, I think if I'm the Leafs, I make it. If I'm the Ducks, it's a bit risky because I believe JVR is entering the final year of his deal. So I think you'd want to know that you could get JVR signed to an extension first before you make that deal.
So let me add another wrinkle to that. Does Vatanen's injury complicate things for any team that'd be receiving him?
Yes, it does. I think it's going to drop the price, and I think that's going to put Bob Murray even more under the gun because I still think teams are going to want Vatanen, and he's young enough to recover, but they said at least 5 months. And it means I think you're going to get some kind of lowball offers coming in where teams are going to say, hey, you don't have much leverage, Anaheim. If Vatanen's the guy you want to move, you only have, what, how many days left? 13 days? 12 days to do it? And I think it's going to force the Ducks. Maybe they have to trade Vatanen for 85 cents on the dollar instead of full value.
Which I think is about what you're getting with Connor Brown.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, you're right. Like, Vatanen's stock has dropped a little bit, but I mean, because that's a laughable deal a year ago.
That's very true. Yeah, yeah, I agree all the way.
The one that I mine's not nearly as sexy, but I think mine is kind of in the ballpark too, because I think the Flames are the team that needs a goaltender, and obviously the Pittsburgh Penguins need to move a goalie. So I'm saying Marc-Andre Fleury to the Calgary Flames for Hunter Shinkaruk.
That's still pretty sexy.
Yeah, it's a big name. Yeah, and to me that kind of propels Calgary up into the sub-elite of the West. If Fleury can play the way he played in the playoffs, they probably deserve to get more than what our number 7th ranked prospect in Calgary's system. But they're not dealing from a position of power.
That's right.
And the goaltending market is definitely a buyer's market. Buyer's market? Seller's market? No, buyer's market. It's a buyer's market.
I'm not a businessman.
Is it bullish or bearish?
Just say something market.
Yeah, it's
we got into hockey for a reason.
It's a market, yeah. But beyond that, I think Shinkaruk's a good fit in Pittsburgh because he helps kind of fill out that left side that's going to start to get thinned out with Matt Cullen getting up there maybe his last season.
Could be.
Chris Kunitz definitely on the back nine. Of course, you know, Gensel's definitely found his place with Crosby on number one line there. Carl Hagelin is the guy that, Matt, you have heading to Vegas in the expansion draft, so they're going to lose him. So, you know, Shinkaruk, he plays kind of a Pittsburgh game, too. You know, he's a small guy, but he's got some wheels. Definitely relentless on the puck. I think Sullivan would like him, so I think he would be a good fit there as well. We were kind of talking beforehand whether or not you'd have to throw in a pick, but I'm not so sure. I think Pittsburgh, again, if they can get any kind of a usable asset, they're going to be happy with that and basically just being able to keep Matt Murray as well.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's a believable trade, especially because, like you said, Pittsburgh doesn't have a ton of leverage. I think the only teams left, arguably, that need a starting goalie are the Flames and maybe the Philadelphia Flyers. And I don't think Fleury's going to go to Philadelphia.
Philly was the only team that out there who wanted him. Well, maybe if they're the only within the division.
Within the division.
Never mind to Philadelphia.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen.
I think that's fair,
yeah.
For sure.
Viable contender in the West.
For sure, they're on the rise.
Yeah, I mean, the West really kind of got thrown in so obvious. Okay, yeah, Chicago, they'll walk their way through. But, I mean, St. Louis, it's hard to imagine.
Perennial contender?
That's
basically, with that defense core.
Yeah, they seem to have figured things out. And these type of runs seem to really solidify teams and kind of push them up. And you know, once they get Johansson back, you know, who are they going to lose in the draft? Maybe they don't.
Using Yarncroc just because again, Nashville's obviously with the big four, you have to go 4-4-1 in the protection strategy, right? So you're going to have to protect Arvidsson, Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, James Neal, probably the other guy.
But you can afford to lose a center now because you got Gaudreau.
Yeah, that's right. Freddie Gaudreau, not Gauthier. Freddie, don't call me Gauthier Gaudreau.
But the Flames defense, top three in the NHL, maybe second best?
I think. Especially current veteran. I think
you love that Carolina defense.
Yeah, they're sneaky, sneaky good, and they've got a couple of really good guys in the system. Also, Philadelphia Flyers are going to start really looking good as a defense corps in years to come.
I wonder if Nashville wins, or even if they don't, if you're going to see more of an emphasis on defensive play and on defensemen as well, and especially mobile defensemen. And I wonder if it'll have an effect on the draft, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if Kevin Shattenkirk's just sitting at home, just
begging for Nashville to win. Please.
Yeah.
My stock goes up with every Nashville win.
It's so true. And for a story that we were working on for our playoff preview, Mike Sullivan said to me, of course it's copycat league. And he said, especially because it's the era of video and there's footage of every shift, every play. You can watch practices. You can watch everything. So I think it really applies to that theory that if Nashville's the new template, everybody can study everything they did and see the way they dominated the play from the back end, and I think you'll see more and more teams wanting to do the same.
All right, let's move on to reader questions, but we'll stick with the expansion theme, and we'll use this as an opportunity to plug the website. If you go to THN.com, Matt Larkin here has written expansion draft previews for all four divisions, breaks down every team. That's all right there on THN.com.
All expansion, all the time.
It took me forever.
All we've got is Stanley Cup Final and expansion draft coverage.
That's it. That's all.
That's all there is.
That's all we need. Okay, so Twitter user John Hamm, who goes by FurDog_08 on Twitter, wants to know which team will take the hardest hit in the expansion draft.
I'm disappointed that it wasn't a verified account. It wasn't real John Hamm.
John Hamm.
To me, I mean, the Ducks are up there, but I think it's no contest. The New York Islanders are in huge trouble with the expansion draft because they're victims of their own depth. So because they have so much talent on defense, I think they're going to be forced to go 4-4-1, so protect 8 skaters, which include 4 defensemen. So you know you have to protect Travis Hamonic, Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk, and then one of Ryan Pulak or Calvin DeHaan you have to protect. So that's 4. Then that means on the forward side, you protect Tavares. Andrew Ladd's got a no-movement clause, have to protect him. And then let's say you go Brock Nelson and Anders Lee. That leaves Josh Bailey, Ryan Strome, Casey Zizekas. A lot of good players are going to be available for the Islanders. No matter what they do, there's going to be a good quality guy dangling for Vegas to grab. Like I think of all the guys Vegas gets, one of its best players is going to come from the Islanders.
Should they try to make a trade similar to the Ducks?
I think they should try to make multiple trades. If I'm Gar Snow, I think maybe even 2 trades before the... Again, that's why it's going to be crazy. Who knows what's going to happen, but I think the next 2 weeks from when the Stanley Cup Final ends are going to be absolutely bananas, and I'm predicting like just a bizarre, never-before-seen swirl of crazy deals. Because even compared to previous years of expansion, it's a different league with the cap system and everything. I think it's going to be just pure madness.
I also don't think it's going to end with the draft itself. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of... Vegas may end up drafting guys who they don't necessarily want in their roster just so they can flip them to other guys. I suspect the roster is going to look very different after the draft. They're going to get their key pieces and their guys that they can market, because you're going to have to do that right off the bat. But I think there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun from the time the season ends. This could be the most interesting offseason we've seen in maybe the past decade.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I've heard whispers talking to different people around the league that Vegas is considering going bananas with their goalies and picking, you know, 5 goaltenders and trying to hold the league hostage for, like, not necessarily all starters, but those sort of 1B types or guys with upside, maybe Antti Raanta, Phil Grubauer, Laurent Brossoit, or, you know, maybe your Brian Elliott or Chad Johnson if they want to sign some free agents. So who knows? If Vegas does that, that'll be pretty exciting if they hold the league hostage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I thought Anaheim as well as a team. I mean, they're going to have to do some wheeling and dealing, but I'm going to go just a simple. And I think the Rangers. I think losing Andy Randa is going to be, that's a big loss for them. I mean, he was very, very good this year, and he could easily have developed into that heir apparent for Henrik Lundqvist, who, you know, was still good in the playoffs, but is definitely, you know, within a time frame of the end of his career coming. So I think losing him is going to be a tough one. And even though he's a UFA, so they would have had to retain him anyway.
Next summer, UFA, he's got 1 year left on his deal.
2018 UFA, yes, yeah. Sorry, yes. So 2018, so yeah, but so I think that to me is a big loss. But a lot of teams are going to get hurt. You know, when I saw this, when I saw who they needed to protect, I wondered how many teams are actually going to get hurt by this. But looking down at your mock redraft, which is significantly different from how you did it the first time around, and it's funny how much things change. But you know, the Jets losing a guy like Joel Armia, you know, that's a kind of a tough one to swallow. But it's teams that have a lot of depth, like the Islanders, like the Jets. They just don't have enough protection slots to keep all of their talent. So there's a lot of teams that I'm sure that are not going to be very happy and who are either going to have to, you know, grin and bear it or make a lot of deals in order to try to keep these. I wonder if they're going to end up dealing a lot of picks. Like, do you want, are you good, willing, what pick would you give up if you're
the Jets to keep Joel Armia.
I don't think you give up a pick in that case, but I think it's more. I think you're going to see more teams giving up picks so that Vegas will take their guys. So if I'm the Kings, I'm like, I'll give you 3 first-round picks. Just take Dustin Brown, please. He's signed until 2022.
Sure, but it's one of the same.
I think you're going to see that. I'm saying I do think you're going to see draft pick compensation, but I think it's going to be more for teams looking for help to get rid of guys.
Rather than to protect guys, don't
take my guy. Yeah, that's what I foresee.
Because an interesting thing that's out there is all those no movement clauses. And yes. I think when GMs were handing those out willy-nilly to guys on long-term deals, they weren't thinking about an expansion draft 3 years down the line where Dustin Brown, a perfect example of a guy I have to protect. Like, look at these guys I want to protect. Ugh, look at the guy I have to protect.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a lot of GMs around the league when they saw the rules that you had to keep protect your guys with no movement clauses. There was a lot of, oh, come on!
Yeah.
Going on around the league. Yeah.
And there are even guys who don't necessarily have no movement clauses, but their salary cap hits are just essentially no movement clauses because no one wants them, right? Because they're just too expensive. So I do think that's going to put teams in tough spots too, where they're going to try and dangle certain players that cost a lot, or they might even get, you know, like Ottawa is a good example where Dion Phaneuf has a $7 million cap hit, and if they can convince him to waive his no move, I think it'd be silly for him not to. He's going to really help his team if he does it, and Vegas is not going to take Phaneuf for $7 million, right? That's interesting too. So you're going to get guys who might waive it or might just already be available, but they're not necessarily going to tempt Vegas, and Vegas might still just go for the better value players.
Right, so let's move on to another question. We touched on this a little bit with Ed's Marc-Andre Fleury trade proposal, but a Twitter user named Jordan asked what goalies the Flames should be interested in. Obviously, Fleury probably tops that list, but what about guys like Antti Raanta and Philip Grubauer that we've talked about a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, Calgary's in a tough spot. I think Raanta and Grubauer are two guys I'd be very interested in, especially if I was a team kind of rebuilding. And I'm very intrigued by Grubauer. I think his career save percentage is like 922 or 923. He was always good coming up through the AHL as well. But if you're Calgary and you're a team that's maturing into a win-now operation, I don't think you want to project a guy as your starter, which honestly, I think that's what Carolina's done with Scott Darling. I think that's a risky move.
Mm-hmm.
For Calgary, I think you're going to want to install a veteran. Maybe it's... I think Fleury is the best fit. Maybe you try to explore a trade for Corey Schneider. To me, that's a guy that contending teams that need goaltending, I would try to pluck from New Jersey because Schneider's already, I think, 31. By the time the Devils are good, he's going to be 42 years old. So I think the Devils would be smart to move him. Another sleeper guy that I look for is Yaroslav Halak. I think he's underrated. He's only got 1 year left on his deal. He wouldn't cost a ton to acquire in a trade, and I still think Halak's capable of stepping in for a year, and he can get hot for stretches. We've seen it. I think he's a pretty good starter.
Well, that doesn't leave me with a whole lot.
No, we keep scooping ourselves. Because my next reader question is about Corey Schneider as well. But go ahead.
Well, I don't really have a whole lot on top of that. I mean, really, when you're looking at the available goalies this summer, unless you're going to pluck a guy like Schneider, and I suppose you could because the Flames are deep in net prospects. I mean, they've got both Tyler Parsons and John Gillies. So if Jersey really likes one of those two kids and is willing to wait, because New Jersey's not a win-now outfit.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them being able to play that away. It's just, you know, what else would they need to throw in to get Corey Schneider? Because Corey Schneider's top 5 goalie in the league right now?
I think, I mean, he didn't play like it this year, but I think overall I would still put him close to that category.
Well,
I think he's a great goaltender.
Yeah, he didn't play like that because New Jersey.
Yeah, because, like, we were the defensemen. Like, I think we played on the team.
Yeah.
We were in front of
I played 13 games there this year. Our number five and number six available goalies are James Reimer and Brian Elliott. So unless the Flames want to go back to the Brian Elliott experiment, I couldn't agree with Matt more that, yeah, this is a team that's on the precipice of winning now, so they need a big-name goaltender to solidify that position.
All right, well, we'll talk about Corey Schneider some more anyway.
Okay.
Luke Teague asks if New Jersey should trade Corey Schneider, and he also suggests sending him to Philly for their first-round pick, which would give New Jersey the numbers 1 and 2 picks in the draft.
Oh.
Is that something that makes sense?
I don't mind that proposal. That's a steep one, and I don't know if it's one that Philly would be willing to pay. But, you know, finally I think it would solidify their crease situation. My concern with that is that does that alone make Philly a cup contender? Does acquiring Corey Schneider put them up with the elite teams, the Washingtons? Sorry, that I'm still going to include them.
Elite on paper.
Yeah, I mean, elite regular season. Pittsburgh, Tampa, I'm still including in that. I just don't know if it's... I don't know if Philly's still there enough to give up that pick for a guy who's not going to put you over the top.
Because the alternative is having the number two pick in the draft.
Yes. Right.
Getting a center who could play in the NHL next year.
Yes.
Yeah, and Nolan Patrick.
Maybe you're elite 2 or 3 years from now.
Sure, and you know, and that's, and then all sorts of different goaltending options are going to become available. I just don't think you spend that now. But it's not a crazy whack job proposal. You know, there, I saw some crazy proposals when I put out that question. I for the magazine a couple issues back, I asked whether or not, you know, give me your, and I put it in big bold letters, give me your realistic trade, and still, wowza, people love to see their team through Homer colored goggles. Unbelievable. But I'm not even sure Jersey's going to be willing to deal Schneider. You know, he's got still several years left on his deal. Maybe they think they can win with him, and you know, the way New Jersey draws, they may need to keep some fans in the seats. I don't think it's a fait accompli that he's going to be moving anyways.
It's a tough one. I agree that I think the price would be too steep. It's weird because I was the one saying that Dallas should trade the number 3 pick for Schneider, but I do think in this
there's
a gap between 2 and 3, a pretty big gap. So trading Hischier or Patrick essentially for Schneider I think is a bit too much. I mean, Schneider was traded for Bo Horvat essentially straight up. That's, I think, closer to fair value, and that's when Schneider was a lot younger, had more upside. So if I'm the Flyers, I think you do need that another good offensive center to build around with Claude Giroux, and then Couturier's better in a shutdown role. And also, like, so far, Ron Hextall, I think he's the most conservative GM in the entire league since he took over. He's really just played it quiet. He's not making aggressive moves. That team's just really padding its farm system. Had, 9 guys in the World Juniors this year, more than any other team. So I don't think Philly would do it. But on the Devils' side, should they trade Schneider? I think they should, because I personally think, just top to bottom, that the Devils are among, maybe they are the most talent deficient team in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So to me, they're so far away from being good. And I think this is not a tank year in the draft, but there's going to be some tank years coming. Maybe next year or the year after. So I think that without Corey Schneider, like, how bad could the Devils be?
They're the worst team in the league if they...
Sorry, Taylor Hall.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Enjoy watching.
Mr. Lottery.
And then don't get me wrong, when I say I think the Devils should move Corey Schneider as well, I'm just not sure they will.
That's all. Yeah, I agree. I don't think they will either.
Yeah. And thanks to the power of the internet, we know that he's got 5 years left. So, I mean, if your logic is that, okay, we're going to be good in 4 years, which 4 years is an eternity when it comes to turnaround, maybe you want Corey Schneider there.
But how good will Corey Schneider be in 4 years?
Well, that's the question you're projecting.
He would be 35 years old and making $6 million.
Yes, yeah. And the other point that I just want to make about the Dallas thing is that Dallas is right there.
Yes.
Because Dallas is a elite-level goaltender away from being a Stanley Cup contender for real this time.
I mean, they won the division last year.
Yeah. This year.
And they had injuries. They had so many injuries this year.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. We'll talk to you next week on the podcast when maybe the Stanley Cup final is over, or maybe when we're waiting for a couple more off days. See you then.